Yes, I'd leave them behind and aim for the farthest star. I'll find out who I am by climbing the mountains of Mars.
And we're live.
Hello, and welcome to a Recall Remake episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa, and with me are...
Walter Vinci.
Romano De Silva.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that neither of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. In this episode, we will be dissecting the original 1990 Paul Verhoeven Total Recall and compare it to the 2012 Len Wiseman remake. But before we get into anything else, Hermano, there was a certain screenings award show recently, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, there was. If you listened to our last episode, I mentioned that we were involved in the making of a film for the 48-hour film project in Providence, Rhode Island. And we were selected for the best of, and along with 14 other films. And there was a screening of all 15 films and awards ceremony afterwards. And we actually won an award. We won an award for best use of line of dialogue. And not bad because we had a silent film. So, yeah, we had to think of a creative way to, you know, use our line of dialogue. So,
well, just getting into the screening is pretty nice because it's the top 15 of 60 that were entered.
Yep, there were 61 teams, I believe, that entered, and I guess they selected 15 for the best of, and that's pretty much it was a just a really varied genre list. There were a bunch of like dark comedies that made it. I think we were the only silent film. There was like a time travel movie that made it, and you know, stuff like that. And yeah, it was just nice to see all the other films that were made. You know, what they considered the best of, and yeah, it was just it was a fun time. You know, we hadn't made it that far before, so it was good just to get up there and be up there with the guys that have been doing it a lot longer than us. There are some guys that have been doing it like 13 years now, doing the 48-hour film project, so they have a lot more experience than us. And this was our first year. As, you know, with me as team leader, I'd helped Wally out in the past, you know, so I had a little bit of insight into what to expect. So that was, you know, huge help as well. And yeah, it was a fun time, and it was good to, you know, come away with that, you know, one trophy. I wish it could have been with something a little more technical, but you know, it was better than nothing. And we'll see if we can come back stronger next year.
And you guys were voted in by the judges.
Yes,
the judges actually found the merit within your movie to bring you into the best of.
Yeah, that's another thing. There were audience awards as well, so you could actually win your audience award, and there was only one team selected for each of the six screenings. So we did not win the audience award, but those teams that did were automatically included in the best of. So we were selected out of the rest of the remaining teams by the judges. So there were, like, I think a panel of a few judges, and they selected our film to be included. So that was good as well.
And how can you find that film again?
Our film is on it's on YouTube. If you search, it's called Wiped. And you know, if you just put in like Wiped 48-hour film project 2012, it should come up. And it's also on the Vimeo page, which is just vimeo.com/HermanoD. Or we have a slightly edited, modified version that a buddy that helped us out, Joey Whip. If you search vimeo.com/JWHIPP, and you'll see like one where we did a little better color grading and a little tighter editing. So, yeah.
So, round of applause.
Yay!
All right, now it's time for yay or nay.
Yay!
This is the part of the show where we discuss what each of us have recently seen on our own. I'll start with you again, Hermano.
Okay. I just recently finished the third season of a show called Misfits. It's, it's a BBC show from Britain. And
you had mentioned watching this in a previous episode, hadn't you?
I don't think so. I don't know if I've ever mentioned any TV shows that I've been watching. But this is one that I kind of was slowly taking in because I kind of burnt through the first two seasons really quick. The seasons are very relatively short. I think the first season is like six episodes. The second one is also six, but they had a Christmas episode. So seven total. And then the third season was eight episodes.
Where do you watch them?
As far as I know, the only place that you can watch them right now is Hulu. So, yeah, and I highly recommend it. It's a great show. I know that, I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I've seen the first season of Misfits, actually.
Yes.
And I love the series.
It's really, really good. I loved the first season, but I really loved the second season. I mean, basically the show, if people that don't know what it is it revolves around a group of kids, misfit kids, who are each caught individually committing some sort of crime, and then they're sentenced to community service. And in the first episode, while they're doing their community service, a freak-like storm happens, and they all get knocked out, and when they wake up, they start to discover that they have powers. And basically, the show goes from there, and it's just, you know, the thing I love about the show is that it's definitely rated R, so they don't have to be tame in any way. They just kind of let it ride. You know, there's cursing, there's sexual situations. It just seems like a more, even though it's involving kids, it seems like a more grown-up show than like.
Sounds exactly like Skins.
In a sense, I guess, except, you know, Skins had superpowers, I guess, but
that's what Heroes could have been.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to mention Heroes. Like, Heroes, even though I thought the first season was good, I think it felt like it wasn't for grown-ups. Like, it felt like it was sort of like a kid's show to me in a lot of ways. But this show is amazing. The stories and the plot lines and the way they set up each episode is, like, I'll just give an example. Like, there's one episode where this kid, and these kids are not the only ones that are involved in getting these superpowers. Pretty much random people start showing up, and they also have superpowers because everyone was involved in the storm. Pretty much wherever they are, I think they're in, like, you know, some small borough in Britain or something. But people start randomly showing up, and at first you'll be like, well, this kid, his only power is that he can control... He can control like dairy products, pretty much, like milk, and he can manipulate like milk and cheese.
That's so strange.
And stuff like that. But when you hear it, you're like, oh, that is like the lamest superpower ever. But then they think of clever ways to make this guy seem
like a lactating woman,
like anything dairy. Like, if you think about it, like, I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't seen the episode, but like, they make this guy seem really menacing. Like, he could really, like, fuck your shit up.
Like the Magneto of...
sort of. Like, he's like the Magneto of cheese, pretty much. but, you know, I don't know. The second season is phenomenal where they go with it. The stories are great. They did something a little different the third season that turned me off at first, but I just finished watching it, and they kind of brought it back with the last episode, and I like what, you know, if they do a fourth season, I like where it's potentially heading.
It's currently in its fourth season now.
Yeah, and I can't wait, like, to check it out, because I want to see where they take it, if they take it where I think they're going to go, but I highly recommend it, yay for that.
That's interesting. So, you know, I've mentioned a lot of British shows that I've watched in the past, and the way you talk about it sounds really interesting. You know, it looks like something I really like, because, you know, there's something about British TV that is... you know, a bit different than U.S. TV.
I feel like they take a lot more chances, and I really love the feel of, like, a season that's only, like, six or seven episodes.
Yeah.
Because it's really tight. Like,
sure.
You can really, like, you know, put together... And they're pretty much one-offs. Like, you don't... It's not always a reoccurring storyline. But when there are, it's good to know the characters and that this happened in the past, because sometimes they will go back to something, but... I mean, it's really, really good. I mean, anybody that's a fan of, like, comics or superhero movies, you know, definitely check out this show.
Cool. Awesome. Okay, Wally.
All right. First thing I saw 6 Days to Air, the Comedy Central documentary on the making of an episode of South Park. I wish this thing was available on actual DVD so I could own a copy of it. It's only 42 minutes long. It's easy to watch. Basically, they just set up cameras all around Trey Parker and Matt Stone's studio, and you see the actual creation of an episode called The Human Centipede from start to finish, and it's pretty amazing. They put it into context where you have like a show like The Simpsons, which takes, you know, about 6 weeks to produce. These guys do it in 6 days.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you see like the storyboards are like right there, you know, doing the storyboards or writing the script, and everything's happening pretty much on the fly.
I remember watching South Park in the past, and I'd always marvel at how the hell did they get this to air so fast, considering what the topic that they were skewering, you know?
Yeah, and it certainly helps them. I mean, in the documentary, they're actually like literally like hours away from like their deadline.
Yeah.
Getting it down to the studio to broadcast it via satellite to New York. So this is a yay all the way,
Sounds like,
especially if you love South Park.
it sounds like a good behind the scenes.
Yeah, and even watching the behind the scenes stuff, I was cracking up laughing watching these guys, recite their lines, for the episode. I wasn't even watching the visuals, just listening to them talk.
Yeah.
It was absolutely hilarious.
That's cool.
So this is a yay all the way. I also saw Aquila and the Bee, which is a movie that I had found while cleaning, which I apparently got from Netflix and didn't know I had. So I figured, well, since I have it here, I might as well watch it. And this is another yay movie all the way. It's got Lawrence Fishburne in it, and it's about this girl named Aquila, and her, she's a girl living in Los Angeles.
Does Lawrence Fishburne play Aquila?
No, Lawrence Fishburne does not play Aquila. Aquila is played by Kiki Palmer, who she she's a young girl in South Central Los Angeles in Crenshaw High. Is kind of tending toward being a wayward girl, but it turns out she's actually really bright, but she just never applies herself, and her big thing is spelling, and so she enters the inaugural spelling bee and wins, where she meets Lawrence Fishburne's character, who helps her develop this, her talent and her ability, and takes her all the way to the Scripps Howard National Spelling Bee. And this movie hits a certain chord with me because I was a competitor in the Scripps Howard National Spelling Bee when I was younger. So that was pretty awesome. So this movie gets an A all the way.
It's funny, on IMDb, it says people who like this also liked Precious. Have you ever seen Precious?
No, because this movie is a very happy movie.
And from Precious, not so happy.
I've heard nothing but like about Precious, very down. And,
yeah, just a bit.
But no, this movie is great. It left me with a big smile on my face. I loved every minute of it. It's a yay all the way.
Cool.
And lastly, I watched God Bless America, Bobcat Goldthwait's movie. It's about a man who's got a brain tumor. He's been told he only has a certain amount of time to live. And he's watching TV one day and just decides that, he's watching all this, reality shows, and he's just so fed up with what it's doing to, people and society in general. He decides to take things into his own hands, and he kills one. He actually kills a young reality star named Chloe, who's the star of Chloe's World. It's an imaginary show on the, in the movie. And along the way, he picks up a sidekick named Roxy, who's a young schoolgirl. And I expected them to go kind of like on a romp along the lines of Falling Down. And this movie is not as much fun as Falling Down. It's not as really not as interesting as Falling Down. Because even their targets are pretty weak targets. I mean, up at the only really cool target that they actually take is at the end, which I won't give that away. Anybody wants to see it. I would say this movie is kind of a meh, because a lot of the time what they could be doing stuff, it's just them sitting in a room talking about things that they hate. So it's like kind of listening to somebody crank on and, not really doing anything about the things that they hate. So it's all right. It's meh. It's not a complete nay. It's more of a meh movie than anything else. Something
I,
if
I
you can
work.
Find it, you can watch. I would say if you have nothing else better to watch, give it a shot. See what you think.
I don't recognize any of the actors in this movie.
Oh yes, you do.
Except for Larry Miller.
No.
Uh-oh, who?
Main guy. Look at his last name.
Joel Murray. Oh, is that Bill Murray's son?
Bill Murray's brother.
Brother. Really?
Yep.
He has another brother other than Brian Doyle.
Who's Brian Doyle?
I bet you that's not Bill Murray's brother.
That is Bill Murray's brother.
It is Bill Murray's brother.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Positive.
So anyway, God Bless America
is a
meh. If you find it in your Redbox or Netflix and you want to check it out, you're like, oh, I feel like watching something. It's I guess it's worth checking out. I mean, I put Falling Down far and away ahead of this movie. It's not terrible, but it's also not as much fun as Falling Down.
But tonally, they're the same. I thought God Bless America was almost like a dark comedy, where Falling Down is kind
Did
of
you
serious.
See it?
No, I haven't seen it, but I heard that it's kind of like a dark comedy.
There's some funny parts, but I still think I find myself laughing more at Falling Down than
really,
and especially when Michael Douglas is going house with the baseball bat in the Korean grocery store, and and then his encounter with the people at like the McDonald's type place that he's at, where the gun goes off by accident. He's like, sorry, 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 things like that. Like, but I guess one of the comparisons that Falling Down is Michael Douglas's character is actually not really malicious. He's pissed off, but he's not evil about it. Like, he's not purposefully going out to try to kill people. He's just taking out his frustrations on things around him.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's actually going around, you know, killing people. Uh-huh. Maybe that has something to do with it, but.
Okay, I watched a few movies. The first one I'll start with is Anatomy of a Murder. This is the Jimmy Stewart movie, directed by Otto Preminger from 1959. In a murder trial, the defendant says he suffered temporary insanity after the victim raped his wife. What is the truth and will he win his case, is how it's described on IMDb. I gotta say, first off, I've thought of both of you because Hermano, it is 2 hours and 40 minutes long.
Oh my god.
And it, as you have said in the past, movies tend to overstay their welcome.
Yes.
This one overstays its welcome. You know, I don't mind long movies as long as everything in it is compelling. And even if there's some unnecessary parts, I can get through them. But if there was some parts in this movie that I was like, you know, I think we could cut out this, or especially at the end when it is so anticlimactic. It's this huge courtroom drama from about 45 minutes on to the rest of the movie. It's mostly takes place in the courtroom, and there's some great sequences. I mean, Jimmy Stewart can do no wrong. I have yet to find a role where he has bored me, and he is amazing. And I get to the end, and I'm expecting this big soliloquy or speech by Jimmy Stewart. No, it's just the verdict, and then a small scene, and then done. And I was like, that's it? Really? Okay. However, I will say it was kind of ahead of its time in dealing with the frankness of a rape case. There were a lot of terminology going on in this movie. I was like, this is 1959. I was like, wow. I was like, pretty ahead of his time. However, there are some cases of like how the woman who is raped is treated in ways sometimes that I don't think would go over well too well today. I think they really use phrases like almost putting blame on her, or the prosecution is trying to do that.
Do they say that she wanted it?
In other words, the way she dressed, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the prosecution does. And I'm like, that would never fly today. So, overall, like I said, the courtroom scenes are excellent. So I'll give it a yay, even though it is a bit long. You might want to fast forward for a couple of scenes. But my next movie is The Big Heat from 1953. This is actually really... I had a blast watching this movie. Tough cop Dave Banyan takes on a politically powerful crime syndicate. And there's a lot more to the story, too, especially in its very brief 89 minutes, which is awesome. And it has great old-fashioned dialogue that you would think of from like a movie from that era, with the cop, the hardened cop, and the femme fatales and the gangsters who speak in gangster talk. It's really, really cool. I loved all the characters. It's a great story of vengeance that really comes together nicely at the end. Not exactly a noir, kind of borders straddles the fence of noir and cop drama, you know.
Who was it directed by?
Fritz Lang.
Who also directed?
I believe Metropolis, yeah. Back from the 1927, yeah. So, and he also directed M, which I have in my queue. I have yet to see. He has dozens of movies on his list that he's done. So, yeah. Have you guys seen Metropolis?
No.
Oh.
I started to a while ago, but I never finished it.
Uh-oh. Silent Film's not doing it for you? Anyways, The Big Heat, good stuff. Yay. And the last movie I'll mention is The Hangover Part 2.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Now, I was a big fan of the first one. I thought it was really funny. Hermano, were you a fan of the first one?
I did like the first one.
You did?
Yep.
Okay.
I love the first one.
Yeah.
I liked it the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
I agree that there's a lot of rehashing in this movie. But I still think it's done pretty well. I think it's still pretty funny. I will say that Ken Jeong is a bit too loud in this movie. He probably has just as much screen time as he does in the first one, but I think it's a little more over the top than the first one, if that's even possible. But not nearly as bad as his role in that Transformers movie. God help me. Anyways, and one of the standouts, of course, is Zach Galifianakis again. I think he has some great lines, especially when he sees a tranny. I thought that was rather hysterical. Hermano, you have something to say about this?
I hated it, man. Like, as I was watching it, I felt like so dirty. I was like, this is like such a fucking obvious cash grab. Like, there's, they pretty much took the script from the first one and said, all right, let's change this line, let's change this line. Put him in pretty much the exact situation. They didn't, I don't know, like, it's, I'm all for making a sequel if it's clever, but this wasn't clever. It was just a rehash. Like, total cash grab. Like, no one can deny it.
So, whenever I hear somebody say that, I always would like to hear what you expect from a movie, a sequel to a movie like The Hangover.
I don't think this movie needed a sequel. Like, it obviously it was like this surprise hit. No one expected it to do whatever it did. I think it made like some ridiculous amount of money. It was like the number one comedy until what, like Bridesmaids or something? Or
sure, yeah.
And like, of course, I'm like, oh, well, of course the studio's not stupid. They're there to make money. They're gonna make money.
Sure,
That's fine and all, but I mean, like, at least do something, like, a new story. Like, no, they're like, you know what? They took the if it's not broke, don't fix it approach and just put out the exact same movie pretty much, throw them into a different location. You know what I mean?
But I ask you again, how would you do something different with a sequel like this?
I don't know, man. You're putting me on the spot. You want me to write the movie right here? Like,
sure. Let's do it.
I don't know. Like, I just think they should have. I mean, it's like saying, like, all right, we have these great characters. There's nothing else we could possibly do with them except put them in the exact same situation. Like, the characters were funny. They were good on their own. Like, they didn't need to be put in the exact same situation. Like, they could have done something different. Like, I don't know. Just, you know, like, maybe not a hangover. Maybe, like, they just get involved in something else. Maybe some carryover, like, with Ken Jeong's character or something. Like, do something else. Like, see what, you know what I mean? Like, try something new. No, don't just rehash the exact same movie
right.
And like, I expect people not to take a shit all over it.
I agree that the overall plot of it, not the we lost somebody and need to find him again plot, but I think the other subplots, like the one involving, what's his name? Shit.
Ed Helms?
Ed Helms. No. The side. Oh, God damn it! Where the cop at the end, you know, that's undercover.
Oh,
yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. But anyways, you know that plot right there, you know, could have been taken out because that was a bit over the top. Some subplots could have been taken out, but I think the overall story of losing someone and finding him again, solving the mystery, I think it's fine. You know, I think it's fine redoing it in another location. You know, they're obviously going to be making a third one. It's going to be set in Amsterdam, I think. So, once again, you know, it's probably going to be a very similar story. However, I have a feeling that Todd Phillips, who I think wrote and directed both of these, might take it in a direction that might... If I'm thinking along a certain line, if he's along the same lines as what I'm thinking, which is probably not true anyways... Involving Zach Galifianakis' character, I think that there's a way that you could really turn it on its head and look back at the first two movies and be like, wait a minute, what was all this? I don't know. If you remember a certain flashback scene from Zach Galifianakis' character, if he takes that and makes that the plot of the third one, that I think would be rather interesting, you know, instead of just lost someone, find them again.
Yeah, I can't wait how, you know, to see how they figure out how to leave that one guy behind again, their friend Doug. It was,
well,
like, so
he didn't,
sloppy.
They didn't leave him behind in the second one. It was Ed Helms' fiance's brother that they left behind.
No, I mean, they decided, like, the movie, I mean,
oh,
in the movie universe,
yes.
Like, they just figured out a really lazy way to not have him be in the wolf pack.
Yeah, that is weird. I was wondering. I'm like, why is he just on the beach?
Because they don't
want
to upset the chemistry of the other three characters, so they got to think of some lame way to just have him be in the movie, but not really be in the movie.
You're right.
It was kind of dumb.
I thought that was kind of dumb. Yeah, I don't think. Obviously, I think the first one is the best one, but I still think that the second one has some really funny moments in it. I mean, the tranny scene. Oh my god, that is still hysterical. Anyways, if you like the first one, go see the second one. All right, that does it for yay or nay. We'll get right into our discussions of Total Recall, but before we get into the movies, we should talk about the short story that they are based off of. Did you guys have a chance to read them?
No, I had not.
I didn't have time.
Okay. It was written by Philip K. Dick, and it was called We Can Remember It For You Wholesale. Now, I had a chance to read it, and I have to say it's pretty interesting. It actually only takes place in two locations, pretty much. Takes place in his apartment, and in the story, which is very concise, his name is actually Quail. It's not Quaid. They changed it in the movies for some reason. And so it only takes place in his apartment with his wife, and his wife has very few lines of dialogue, and it takes place in the Recall Incorporated office. Where he has his procedure done. And it's not nearly as ambiguous as the first movie is. It's very clear-cut as to what he goes through, and there's no action in it at all, except for him disarming a gun from a police officer. Other than that, it's just straight-on dialogue and walking from one place to another. That's it. So it's very curious to me how they expanded this story into what you see in these two movies. I think we'll get into that a little bit later. So let's talk about Paul Verhoeven's Total Recall. Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sharon Stone, Michael Ironside, and Ronnie Cox, IMDb describes the plot like this. When a man goes for a virtual vacation memories of the planet Mars, an unexpected and harrowing series of events forces him to go to the planet for real, or does he? Now, from 1987 to about 2000, Paul Verhoeven, in my opinion, really couldn't do any wrong. His first hit in the U.S. was RoboCop, which he followed with Total Recall, then Basic Instinct, Showgirls, and Starship Troopers, and Hollow Man. So he had a run of audacious, over-the-top spectacle movies. Hermano, what was it like revisiting Total Recall?
It actually was quite fun. Like, I hadn't seen the full unedited version in a long time. Maybe the last time I'd even seen it, and it was on TV. You know, you always edit it for content and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just forgot a lot of the specific scenes in it, or the, you know, the ones that they cut out, obviously, because they couldn't show. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, I still think the story is pretty solid, especially being from 1990. I think, for the most part, all the practical effects still look pretty decent. I don't think the special effects all hold up that great, except for, you know, a select few. But I had a lot of fun. I mean, back then, like, Arnold can do no wrong for me. I loved all the one-liners. I wasn't one of the haters that hated all of them. I thought they had their... In movies like this, they fit, because these movies are slightly cheesy. Like, you know, RoboCop and...
Starship Troopers.
You know, they're all like kind of like teetering on almost like a B movie cheese.
It's funny you say that, because I found that Paul Verhoeven's movies aren't exactly over the top. What they are exaggerated.
Yes.
I think that they don't cross that line to over the top. There's a fine line, and I don't think he ever really except for Showgirls. I think that is way over the top. But I think he knew what he had with the actors in the script.
Yes.
Anyways, back to Total Recall. I think it's exaggerated and not over the top.
I agree.
Continue.
As a director, I actually like Paul Verhoeven. Mm. His movies all have a very distinct feel. Like, if you show me a movie and I didn't know it was him directing, I could just pick it out. Because all his movies have this distinct, like, kind of over-the-top violence / cheesy dialogue, like, not particularly well written, and just a lot of fun in places.
Yeah, it all comes together somehow.
Yeah, and somehow he makes it seem like better than a typical B movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I would never say that any of his movies that I've seen that I love are like bad. I mean, I technically can tell if I'm, you know, judging it against like a really great action movie. Mm-hmm. I could be like, well, yeah, that was better.
Well,
but it's just different, not better.
You take another Philip K. Dick adaptation, like Minority Report.
Yes.
So you put Minority Report up against Total Recall, which is the better movie? And which is the better made movie?
Honestly, yes, Minority Report. But they're both good in their own way.
Exactly.
Then, like, I can't say that, you know, this one sucks because this one exists. They're both good. They're just both different.
Yes. Wally.
I love Paul Verhoeven stuff. My favorite movies are Total Recall, RoboCop, and Starship Troopers. Mm-hmm. And I love the commercials because I love when he throws in these like weird like commercials for just stuff that you would normally like you might normally see like in that particular universe.
Yes.
Like on TV, like in the Recall commercial, the numerous commercials that they run during Starship Troopers.
And RoboCop, too.
And RoboCop.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, now that you say that, you only see the one or two commercials for Recall in Total Recall, but you don't see anything else, and I wonder if those were edited out or if something he even thought about putting in there.
I don't know. I just got a kick out of seeing them. I'm like, oh, there it is. There's those commercials that I expect that out of him. I have a lot of fun watching it again. When we get to the comparison about which Hauser is better.
Right, we'll get there.
Yeah, I got something to say about that, but I just had a lot of fun, you know, watching it again.
Yes.
I got it for $5 at MovieStop, so yep. You know, it's now in my it's now officially in my collection as opposed to, you know, something like, oh, I remember seeing that from way back when. So I had a lot of fun watching it. It was cool.
Yeah, the words you guys have used the most is fun, and that's exactly what I had. I just had a blast watching this movie, and I hadn't seen the whole thing like you, Romano. I haven't seen it in a long time either, and it really struck me how fast-paced this movie is. From beginning to end, there's no break, there's no let-up. Every scene matters, every scene has a purpose. It just goes, and it just flows from one scene to the other perfectly, seamlessly, you know? Also, Ronnie Cox plays a great bad guy. He's an awesome bad guy. And you know from the get-out that he's a bad guy. You know, there's very clear delineations in this movie. Good guy, bad guy, no middle ground. You know, Michael Ironside, bad guy. Well, I mean, you do get a twist of somebody turning on somebody else, you know, towards the end of the movie. But other than that, you know, good guy, bad guy, you know where everybody stands. Sharon Stone, very sweaty, very sexy, you know. I think one of her better roles. Obviously, she had better roles from the late 80s on to the mid-90s, and that's it. That's about it. But anyways, Arnold, perfectly cast in this. I think also because his face is so elastic, it works rather seamlessly with Verhoeven's aesthetic, you know, of that almost over-the-top, that exaggerated look. You know, his facial expressions are so exaggerated, you know, especially at that time of his career. You know, he was still young enough to be able to pull off these things. It was funny. His performance is, you know, an exaggerated performance for an exaggerated movie. So, you know, I like the theme of corporate greed and the wealthy versus the poor in this movie. It can be explored, but it's just too obvious to really discuss any further, I think. It's just, there's no subtlety in this movie.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah, and we have complained in other movies of not being subtle enough or just being stating out the things outright.
Uh-huh.
But in this movie, it works perfectly. You know, everything's right in your face. And you know Verhoeven's strength is not subtlety. So, and I find the ambiguity of this movie is really fascinating. You really are left guessing if he's experiencing a dream or if it's real at the end. You know.
Yeah.
So those are my thoughts. Anything else you guys want to get into further with this movie?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Once we get into the remake, I'll compare a little more. But right now, that's pretty much it.
Okay, so should we give grades for this movie?
Sure.
Hermano?
A minus.
Wally?
I'd probably give it a B plus.
I would give it a B plus as well, so that's a B plus average.
All right, B plus average for the 1990s Total Recall.
Okay.
Which brings us fast forwarding to 2012.
Yes, Lynn Weissman's 2012 Total Recall, starring Colin Farrell, Kate Beckinsale, Jessica Biel, and Bryan Cranston. IMDb describes it like this. A factory worker, Douglas Quaid, begins to suspect that he is a spy after visiting Recall, a company that provides its clients with implanted fake memories of a life that they would like to have led. And it goes wrong, and he finds himself on the run. Now, we started with Romano for the original, so I'll start with Wally about his thoughts regarding this remake. Was it worth it?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun watching this movie too, actually. I like a lot. I like some of the nifty background concepts they brought into it. I like how they kept it on Earth as opposed to going to Mars. I thought that was a neat touch. And you know, there's that eco nod, you know, at the very beginning of the movie, where they explain that there's really only two places on the entire planet that people can live: Australia or the Republic of Great Britain. And I like the way the Sprawls look in the colony. I like the way the Sprawls look in the difference between the colony and the Republic. I like the overall look of the movie. I think Quaid's job that he has is better than the job that he has in the remake is better than the one that he has in the original. The original's apparently Arnold Schwarzenegger's just paid to break up rocks. This one he's actually building something. He's actually assembling robots, which come into play later. So I like this movie. I'm a big sci-fi fan. It's probably like my favorite genre is sci-fi, and this gave me all the sci-fi elements that I like in a sci-fi movie. It has robots. It has flying cars. It's got a really cool thing called the Fall. I love this thing. I wish it was real.
So you say you like sci-fi and you thought this movie had good sci-fi elements.
Yes.
But the overall story itself.
The overall story is more or less the same as the story from the 1990s Total Recall. Okay. It's the same. It follows the same plot beats.
Okay.
It's essentially the same story. The character names are all the same as well. You know what I mean?
Well, except for a huge subplot.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay, Hermano?
Full disclosure, this movie had a lot of checks against it instantly. I typically hate remakes. I think they should die. the original movie is good, it's out there, go see it. I mean, the only time I think you should do that it's maybe okay to do a remake is when a movie is like great from like maybe like the 50s and maybe they use like cheesy effects to tell a story or something like that and you want to maybe update it in that way.
Oh, so Godzilla worked for you, right?
No.
But, and so did The Day the Earth Stood Still?
I was going to use that as my example. I think they kept pretty much the exact same story. They just updated the effects, which is fine. I still don't think it was necessary. I think the original is great. But I can give it a slight pass in updating imagery and effects and not changing the story at all, which they didn't. This movie, however, completely changed the story as far as the characters and subplots and specific characters that live in this movie that didn't live in the other one. I really thought this movie was crap. One, they did the one thing I've started to really effing hate in movies. Abundance of lens flares.
Oh my god, dude.
There were so many effing lens flares in this movie that it was to the point of distraction. Like, I wanted to walk out.
It was
like,
more distracting than a J.J. Abrams movie.
I thought Star Trek was bad. This movie, insane.
Dude,
insane.
You're so right.
It was the equivalent of someone, like, literally putting their hand in front of their projector and doing hand puppets. Like, it was that distracting. It was insane. Like,
it was somebody shooting a flashlight in your eye every 2 seconds.
Pretty much. Like, someone in the front of the theater just walked up and started pointing, like, a laser pointer at you, like, nonstop. Like, that's what it was like. And, like, it was ridiculous. It didn't even look good. Like, there were lens flares that would go across an entire character's face as they're doing dialogue.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Like, you're not supposed to be paying attention to what this guy's saying? You'd rather put a lens flare across their face? Like,
when Star Trek 2 comes out and you go watch it,
oh my God,
and you start
dude.
Complaining, I'm going to say, Total Recall 2012.
Seriously, you're going to have to, because, I mean, it seems like a small nitpick, but if you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, and I guarantee
you. Well, do you really want to recommend people to go watch it?
I don't, because you'll probably be mad at me. But I just thought the original already had that great twist in the original, which they kept. You already know it if you've seen the original, so there's no surprise there. They also changed the fact that, I don't know if this is a spoiler, as far as, well, you already said it, they're not on Mars.
Right.
They're actually on Earth still, and they just there's only, I guess, two land masses that are capable of, you know, having people inhabit it, and like Wally said, Great Britain and Australia. I didn't think the setting was as good as Mars. What else can I? I'm trying to think of what spoilers, because I mean, there's certain characters that live in this movie that didn't live in the original 1990 remake that I'm like, I think I like the original, like the fact that it had mutants in the original, where in this one it's like cyborg, like police.
Well, I mean, those aren't like equivalent characters. They're,
in a sense, they're not equivalent, but I thought that there was more of a charm and a nostalgia to the original.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, because I'd seen it when I was younger. This one just took everything that I liked in the original and just said, no, we're not going to do that. You know what I mean? So it had a lot of checks, like strikes against it right away. I'm like, all right, they're not on Mars. I didn't know that going in. I'm like, that sucks. Like, what the hell are they going to do? Then all of a sudden, it's not like some guy that's like just like hoarding this, like selling people air pretty much, like, which I thought was a great thing in the original. And this one, it's right. Like, it's a guy that's wants to build an army. You know what I mean? Like with cyborg police. And I'm just like,
is it ever really clearly explained as to what his motivations were? See, that's the thing. I'm sorry. I'll let you finish.
That was pretty much it. They're pretty clear on, yeah, he's trying to, that's the whole reason why he wants to, he uses that guy, the leader of the resistance in this one, as a scapegoat to, he like sets him up for like doing some kind of like crazy explosion or something in some, I think Great Britain was the, like the superpower, and like Australia was like the slums.
Sure.
I think.
Whatever.
I don't know. You go ahead, man. I'm okay, making myself sad talking about this movie.
I'm more on the same lines as you, Hermano. I don't think this movie is nearly as fast-paced or exciting. It starts off slow. You know, it takes about maybe 15, 20 minutes to get into anything interesting. Whereas the first one, it starts off right away.
Right away.
Just
right away.
Goes.
Yep.
You know? Well, that idea of a bus that goes through the core of the Earth.
That's awesome.
Silly.
No, it's awesome.
No, it's not. No, it is.
You're never going to change my mind about this. The fall is awesome.
No, it's
it
so
looks
silly.
Cool.
Eh.
I think
even
it
the
looks
concept
cool.
Of,
the
of,
concept
of
it is cool.
Eh.
But yes, technically it's silly.
Of a gravity, a gravity-fed train that goes through the Earth's core
in,
has to reverse
in,
gravity.
What, 11 minutes? Is that how long it takes to go from
17 minutes.
17 minutes.
To go through the core.
And it didn't even look like it was going that fast.
It's not. It's gravity-fed, which is why they reverse gravity halfway through so they can pull itself back to the other.
But it's still
side.
Going fast. It still has to go fast.
It's still
the gravity
fast.
Is pulling it. It doesn't look like it's going that fast.
It's going fast.
Technically, it doesn't look very interesting.
Oh, I think that thing is so cool.
No. I will say I did like the idea of Kate Beckinsale's character being like a fusion of Sharon Stone's and Michael Ironside's characters from the original.
Yep.
I thought that was fine. You know, if you're going to condense a story, if you're going to try to make it a little bit tighter, combining those two characters, that's fine by me. You know, she was believable as a kick-ass character, you know. Her fight scenes with Colin
were
Farrell.
Awesome. I wish I had the fight coordinator for this for Batman for Catwoman.
I don't know about that.
Oh, I would have believed Catwoman's fight scenes far better if they had this fight coordinator for that movie.
I didn't find anything wrong with Catwoman's fight scenes.
She's using too strong a move for too small a frame. Kate Beckinsale's all leverage when she's flipping things and throwing things over, using wrist locks and sweeps to get in her fight against Colin Farrell.
Anyways, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but the scene in which Colin Farrell is asked to shoot somebody in the lobby of the apartment complex.
Yes.
You know, it's the same scene as the scene in the original Total Recall.
Sort of.
Well, yeah, sort of. Not nearly as effective. Because there's too many people around.
Yes.
The original does a great job of and just having those three characters there, and Arnold's trying to figure out himself. You know, he doesn't have any influence except for those two characters and his own mind. In this one, there's way too much distraction around, you know, and you're just like, first off, how many times can you run away from so many robots shooting at you? You have these perfectly manufactured robots, and they have piss poor aim. Awful. Awful.
They don't have targeting systems.
Oh my God. You're not really going to explain that away, are you?
Try to counter that. No
Oh.
targeting systems.
Was it described to me in the movie?
No, but they use a targeting system. The targeting system is used only in the helicopters. The robots themselves don't have it.
Anyways. Bryan Cranston, I love him as an actor. Not nearly as convincing a corporate bad guy as Ronnie Cox. He does too much himself. He doesn't have his lackeys do work for him as much.
You know, him, he's part of the reason why I haven't pulled the trigger yet on Breaking Bad, because I don't buy him as this menacing, like, imposing figure.
Well,
He looks like someone's, like,
oh my God. So
dad.
in Breaking Bad, he straddles these lines of being an imposing figure in one scene and being this meek character in another, because it's really with the interactions of the people he works with or he deals with. So I can't say enough good things about Breaking Bad and his performance and everybody's performance in that. So you should not take this as a litmus test for
No, I'm
Breaking
not
Bad.
using this as like some judgment on his character on Breaking Bad. I've seen like previews for Breaking Bad, and they try to make him look like menacing or imposing. I'm
Well,
not buying it.
those are previews, and there are scenes in which he does, and everything is so convincing in that show.
I think I'll still check it out eventually, but
Eventually. Now. Like when we finish here tonight. Anyways, his character, it's not as fleshed out as the original. They don't develop that relationship between the corporation and the people at all. In the first one, it's so clear the corporation run by Ronnie Cox provides air to the colonies on Mars. He cuts off the air to the colonies on Mars. Bad guy. Good people? Mutants, right? Okay. You sympathize with the mutants. How am I supposed to sympathize with all these people in, where is it, Australia?
Australia.
When I have no interaction with any of the
You
people
never
from
get to meet
Australia.
them. Yeah.
Nobody. You know? They're all just random faces in a sea of people. You know? And what was his reason again for wanting to bring the army of
Space.
space for what?
He
Wanted
wanted need to bring the people
overpopulation.
from the great from the Republic. He wants to bring them over to the colony. The only way that those people, the elitists, can take over is if they wipe out all the indigenous people. Much
I
like
didn't get that at all. I
like when
remember
Great Britain tried to own when once owned Australia as a penal colony
that.
back, way back in the day.
Yeah, I think it's just trying to be too much. Anyways,
Just saying.
no, I didn't buy it. I certainly didn't buy it as much because I had no connection to any of these characters. You know, I had connection to the mutants because,
Well, because of a little girl that says, I can read your fortune.
yes,
No, but you
yes, that
meet
little
them.
thing right
You
there,
meet the
and you
resistance.
meet other people in the resistance who are mutants, and they're awesome. And Quaid, Schwarzenegger's character, is so willing to help them. You know, he sympathizes with them. And he doesn't judge them at all. His first interaction with these people, he is so sympathetic towards their plight. And I have no sympathy for anybody in Australia because I haven't met them. You know, no, I haven't been introduced to them. You know? Okay. Why is Jessica Biel in this movie? I don't know why she's in this movie. She's so such a waste of character. It could have been anyone. I would have more preferred to see just another random cab driver again, and this cab driver help him out, you know, because he's just stuck in the middle of the
Well,
freeway or
she's
whatever.
playing the Melina character
Yeah.
from.
But how was she introduced? It's just how does she know that he's gonna land on the highway at that
She
point?
doesn't. She sees him when she drives by, and she's like, I've been looking all over for you.
Oh my God, she drives by
No.
at that exact
No,
moment.
she says something. She's like, you popped up back on the grid.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what that means. Like, he hasn't.
you're all over every police scanner.
Yeah. Well, but how does he know she know that he's in that exact moment at that spot? You
Police
know,
chase?
she, huh?
The police?
The police chase
She's
that's going
following the
on.
police
I think
chase.
all the cameras are on him and
Yeah.
stuff, so she knows where he is.
Well, so I think the introduction to the Melina character in the original is a lot better. You know, the way he is led to her with a note written by himself, you know, and he goes over and tries to find her, and the revelation of what their relationship was, so much neater, so much nicer, you know. And then in this remake, you have that, you know, he gets her out of harm's way and takes her to his old apartment, I guess, and he starts playing the piano. I'm like, I'm so bored at that point. It's like, what is the point of this?
He mentions wanting to play the piano earlier.
Oh, God.
It's a callback to what he's like, oh, I'd love to learn how to play the piano one of these days.
But it leads to a scene that is so... It just slows the movie down immediately.
No, it's just like him finding the tape of himself earlier.
I understand what the purpose of it is, but the momentum screeches to a halt.
All right.
You know, so I'm like, eh, whatever. There was a nod to the original, 2 weeks,
yep.
You know, with,
yes.
with the woman. I thought that was pretty cool, you know? I thought the idea of the holographic...
The holocollars?
Holocollars, yeah.
See, I didn't like that. I think this movie's biggest crime is that it's never going to be remembered the same way the other one is as far as, like, iconic scenes.
True.
Like, there's the scene where he goes through the scanner, and you just see, like, his little skeletal little gun, and he
yes.
jumps through it. The scene with the 2 weeks where he's actually the woman,
mm-hmm.
and he throws the head. Get ready for a surprise.
Surprise.
Yes.
Like, all those things are kind of... Quado is not in this movie.
No. Nope.
And then they tried to be... That scene wasn't that bad. I thought it was kind of cute. A little funny. But the biggest lame-ass attempt to really throw it back to the original was the three-breasted woman. There were no mutants at all in this movie. And for some reason, a random girl with three boobs shows up.
True, yes.
How lame is that? Like,
yeah.
It's so cheap. Like, hey, everybody, remember the first one that had
yeah.
mutants? Here's one mutant in a world where you haven't set up at all that there are mutants anywhere on either one of these continents.
Yeah.
And then there's just a random three-breasted woman.
It's pretty interesting how they got a PG-13 rating with... They did have one F-bomb, and they
yep.
had a three-breasted woman. Although, it was probably amount of screen time that her
they
breasts
probably
were shown.
Yeah, they probably considered it, like, cartoony. Like, it's not, like, showing, like, an actual woman.
Yeah.
Know?
Anyways. I will say that I think there was only one truly exciting action sequence, and that was the elevator scene. I enjoyed that scene. I thought it was well done. I thought it was filmed well, nice choreography.
I honestly don't even remember what was the elevator scene.
The elevators
the
where they're going up and down
and
sideways.
They're in turbo lifts, essentially. They go up and down and
that
sideways.
That was lame because, like, think about it. Like, half the time they're jumping, they're not even really looking where they're leaping.
No, I thought they were
looking. And they just randomly land on something.
No, I thought they looked every time. They even established where what they saw before
I
they
didn't
jumped.
Really like it. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention another iconic thing. The Johnny Cabs.
I wanted Johnny
yeah.
Cabs.
No
I missed
Johnny
Cabs.
Cabs in this movie.
Yeah, you're right.
Which
come
try to kill
on.
You if you swear with them.
So, you know, my thought, going back to... I think it was utilized in both of these movies. So, I told you about the short story and how it's 20 pages long and it's very limited storytelling. And you just wonder how they extrapolate that and find... make it into a... In the first movie, they make it into this corporate greed and a colony on Mars and all that.
Now, does the story stay truer to one film over the other?
No.
So there's no mutants in one?
No. No. It's just, I mean, there's maybe four characters in the whole story.
Okay.
So I have a feeling that in the first movie, there was that somebody... A producer, a writer, whatever, wanted to adapt the short story and was trying to find a way, trying to have it produced, and that there was this script, this other script that was floating around, and a producer had it, and they fused the two together. That's how they created the story based off of that original short story by Philip K. Dick. And I have a feeling that they did the same thing with this movie. I have a feeling that they had this original script, that some of the basic plot lines and ideas, especially I think the bus thing that went through
the fall.
The fall, whatever.
The fall enslaves us all.
Yeah. Oh God. that was in an original script, but then another producer had an idea to remake the original Total Recall, and they fused those two ideas together. I think that's what happened in these movies. Works great in the first one, not so well in the second one, in the remake.
I don't know, like, I feel like whenever they make a movie, they try to change some things because they're like, you know what, we're doing a remake, but let's kind of make it our own. So they changed too many things that made the original like fun. Like this movie was not fun. Like they made they played it completely straight and serious.
Yes.
And why they made that choice, I don't know. But I think it was the wrong choice. I think the other one was just like a fun time at the movies. Like it was like this like cheesy, like, you know, one liner after another, you know, fast paced movie. And then they go serious. They change some of the iconic scenes. Then they try to throw some stuff back. This movie was like all over the place for me.
Plus, in the original, it's so much fun because of the over-the-top violence, which Paul Verhoeven is known for. My God, those blood packs.
Yeah.
Those blood packs are exploding everywhere, you know? And it just adds to that aesthetic of fun, you know? Like you said, over-the-top fun.
And I still remembered scenes, specific scenes, and I hadn't seen the movie in like probably 10 years.
Yeah.
And I won't remember the remake in like a week.
True.
Because there was nothing in it that stood out, anything even close to, even just like the Johnny Cab. Like, is just this thing. If you just said Johnny Cab, like Total Recall, what can you pull out in this movie except for maybe The Fall? That was that, like, and maybe
I think, what was that, in The Core? And that's what I would think. Oh, The Core? Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Anyways. I agree with you, Hermano. I don't think there's much.
I mean, I feel like I'm shitting over Wally a little bit because he did like it, but I'm just saying, like, this. Everyone has, you know, their own opinions, and like, I'm not saying Wally's wrong for liking it. I'm sure there were some things. I thought there was some cool looking action scenes, like that one point where Jessica Biel and Colin Farrell's character are going down in the elevator, and Kate Beckinsale's character is running at them, and she's trying to like slide in at the last minute. She slides in through the top hole.
Yes,
that was a cool looking shot.
That was a cool looking shot.
What else? I thought, I don't know if we want to wait for spoilers, but the...
Well, let's get into spoilers now.
All right. So, spoilers. Okay.
So, you wanted to mention something specific, Hermano?
The final scene with Kate Beckinsale, I thought was really...
Oh, yeah.
Like, you saw that coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
Because she picked up that hologram band, neck band, earlier in the movie. You knew it was just like, oh, what is she going to... She's going to use it later or something against them. And she uses it in the final scene. They tussle for, like, a minute. Not even, like, 30 seconds. Yeah. And then she's just shot in the chest.
Yeah.
I didn't even get that she was shot in the chest. I thought he electrocuted her because it's so... That last scene, I didn't like that much.
Well, I think he did electrocute her at first to, like, get her off of him. And then he just shoots her once in the chest.
Yeah. I didn't even see him shoot.
Yeah, it's just so... Well, that's the thing, too. It's a PG-13 movie, so there's no blood. You know, there's no... If you want to make a remake, you have to have some sort of truth to the original, you know, respect to the original.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do that, then go over the top, you know? But the studio wants a PG-13 movie so more people will see it, and they don't want to make a rated R movie. So It's disappointing that it's not as fun. Now, I want to go to the ends of both of these movies. In the original Total Recall, the way it ends is, you know, the man, it's so good. But you know, the atmosphere is made, and everybody's okay. You know, Arnold is okay, and Melina's okay. And
wait a minute, you're skipping the best part. Another iconic scene from the movie when they're both sucked out onto the planet's surface.
Yes.
And they have those scenes where obviously they can't breathe because the atmosphere hasn't been created yet, and their eyes are just like bulging, and Arnold's
faces,
doing that face like,
yeah.
And you know, his eyes are bulging out and hers. You know, that makeup, it held up pretty
well.
Damn,
that's the thing too. The makeup, the mutant makeup is amazing. It's so well done. It still holds up today because everything's so practical, and everybody mutant's features are so well done.
Yeah,
you know?
And you get like those one-liners from Arnold, like where that guy that when he first shows up, the guy's like, "You got a lot of nerve showing your face around here," and he's like, "Look who's talking."
Yeah,
you know, like I love shit like that. Like, you know what I mean? It's just fun dialogue. Like this movie just played it way too serious.
Yeah. Well, the end of the original where it ends with those two kissing and it fades to white.
Uh-huh.
You know, almost all movies go to black.
Yes.
And when a movie fades to white, you have to have an assumption of a dream sequence or something like that.
Like an awakening.
An awakening, a dream sequence, or going into heaven or something like that,
yep.
You know, moving on. So in this one, the movie just ends. It just cuts after they kiss, you know, when they're looking at at the damage or whatever, you know?
Well, he looks over at a building and it looks like it has the recall billboard on it or something.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess, the way they...
There's no ambiguity at all. You know, there's no setup of you wondering if this is real or not. It is...
Well, they do a scene similar where, like, in the original, like, Arnold's like, what if this is all a dream? And she's like, well, hurry up and kiss me before you wake up. They try to do a similar line with Jessica Biel and Colin Farrell's character. I think it's not the exact same line, but it's something along those lines. Like, where she's like, he's like, you know, I don't know if it just, did he actually say a line?
I don't remember.
I don't recall either.
Yeah.
Don't recall.
Oh. See, but that's what I mean. Like, I can't even remember. I think that he said something along those lines, or maybe you're just supposed to, he just insinuated it by looking at the billboard and looking back, like, maybe this is a dream.
Yeah.
And then she just kisses him. I don't know.
Yeah, just not as memorable. Wally?
All right. I like my Arnold Schwarzenegger Hauser better, especially during the last scene where, in the original, where he and Molina are strapped into the chairs and they're going to completely erase Molina and they're going to turn him completely into Hauser. And he's struggling. And he's gigantic. Arnold, he rips one of the handguards off and stabs the guy in the throat with it.
Yep.
I'm like, who's gonna rescue Colin Farrell? There's no way he's ripping these guards off.
There's this lame like mole character or something.
I didn't like that where he cuts him, he sets him free. I'm like, I wanted to see him break free from the chair.
And then he's supposed to feel bad that he dies or something.
Even though
in the shootout,
the weird thing is, it looks like the way that particular scene is shot, it looks like it's really confusing as to who's shooting who.
Like in most of the scenes in this
movie. And I'm like, who is shooting? All right, who is shooting at this guy? Like, where did he come from?
I honestly didn't know he had died at that point. I thought he just ran and hit or something. Yeah. Like, I'm like, wait, that's him? He died? Like, because, I mean, you introduced this character in the movie. It's the same guy that in the original calls him from the payphone, leaves the suitcase for
and
him.
And disappears.
And then disappears. He never comes back in the original. In this one, the guy calls him up or whatever and tells him, hey, you know, go here, go there or whatever, and then later on he just randomly shows up again. It's really clunky. Like, you're like, I thought it was going to be the same way as the original, like this random guy just helped him off in the resistance, and then later on he just shows up and frees Colin Farrell from the chair.
Yeah, also when Bryan Cranston takes Colin Farrell from the hideout with Bill Nye's character, and they're outside of that building is, what is it? It's like gas. Nobody can breathe. They have to wear gas masks.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought that they were going to play that into, you know, this, you know, tying that into, oh, it can't go outside of this building or else you'll die, you know, you won't be able to breathe.
Yeah.
But that's never addressed.
No.
You know? Why did they leave the helicopter behind? There's a couple of plot holes in the movie that I didn't like. like, one of the big glaring ones is when Bryan Cranston reveals his big plan toward the end to send in a synthetic army to the colony to kill everybody.
The Phantom Menace.
And to kill everybody in the colony, and they can take it over for the Great Britain Republic. But there are still human cops. Like, you don't need human. If you have a cheap force that you're obviously mass producing in a factory, why do you still need human police officers? That takes away a lot from it takes a lot away from the ante, because these machine robots are actually really hard to destroy unless you have a high powered gun.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so like there's these robots that are mixing up with like the actual like humans. Just like, oh, well, if you have all these like synthetics, like why do you need a human police force? Why not just have a full synthetic force? And that would give you even a more sci-fi flavor.
Because
you'd have these robots, and they could do all sorts of, they could have scanned them. They could have had the callback to the scan where they scan his skeleton and you see like the gun, and then a chase, you know, chase ensues.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of them. The other one is, if people have cell phones implanted in their hands, why does Kate Beckinsale have a cell phone in her bag? It rings at the very beginning of the movie, but then she's got one that she actually talks to.
I mean, she can't blow her cover.
In her ear. But, I mean, if it's one of those things that people have, I mean...
Not everybody has it. It looks like only a select few people have them, you know?
Yeah, it's like an implant type
thing. Yeah, and speaking of which, that was kind of nonsensical to have him to cut it out of his hand like that. I'm like, that looks like it would hurt a lot more.
Yeah.
Then he's like,
Yeah, like...
Ah. I'm like, no, that would be oh my God!
And he's perfectly fine. Like the rest of the movie,
he just
like
puts a little cord around his hand. Like, granted, in the Verhoeven thing, he's got it in his brain, and he's gonna pull it out.
That's a great
scene. That's a great iconic
scene.
But the thing, but my problem with that scene is that the thing's about the size of a golf ball, and there's no golf ball bump on Arnold Schwarzenegger's head.
Within the world that Verhoeven builds and the context of the movie, that scene works great. You know,
I do miss the Johnny Cabs. I thought there was gonna be one in the movie. I was hoping for one. I was hoping for I was hoping for the traitorous cab driver at some point too. That I was hoping
Right.
that they'd be one like, come on, get in, I'll get you guys out of here.
Yeah.
And like, oh no, I'm a bad guy. But yeah, there was those. I mean,
I
those
mean,
things were
they could
kind of
have easily
glaring
worked
as
in
far as story
mutants if there's
problems.
unin in a, how do you say it? Uninhabitable places?
Inhospitable.
Inhospitable places on Earth, you could still have worked in the
The
mutant
mutants, yeah,
idea, you
I thought
know?
they could have done that with like the living in the subway tunnels, the mutants. You know what I mean? That maybe they periodically raid the up top, or they somehow use the fall to get things that they need, because you know what I mean? There's no one living up there. I mean, I like the rickety chair as opposed to the give me open your mind to me. Open
You
your
prefer that?
mind.
You
I
don't
prefer
like.
the rickety chair than Kawato.
Really?
Yeah, I
Oh,
definitely
man.
did.
I don't
I
know
thought
about
that made
that.
a lot more sense than a creature that open your mind to
Well, it made more
me.
sense as far as like the reason why they couldn't find Quado is because he was this little mutant in a guy's chest. Where the other guy, they made. Like, there was no reason why. Like, a good way to explain why they couldn't find this guy. Like, he's just a guy. Like, it's not like he's like. You know, he's hiding in like it's weird that they couldn't put two and two together. Like, hey, we can't find him. We go to this Australia all the time. How come we can't find this dude? If you think it'd be relatively easy to find him, they don't put two and two together that maybe he could be in that uninhabitable zone. Like,
How many
it's the
bat? How
one
many?
place they won't go. They can't send the robots there. They don't have to worry about breathing air.
All right. Well,
So
if
like,
you
just send them
if
all through these
I
fucking
mean
zones and
if
find
you
them.
if you were like a resistance villain, what would you look for somebody in Chernobyl?
If you have these robots to
If you
do
have
it for
these
you,
robots, send
well,
them
we have
in.
robots that could we have robots that could do that. We don't go
Well, that's
looking in
his
places like we don't
point.
go looking in places like that like automatically.
But that's my point. Like, they could have just said, like, you know what? Like, why wasn't that even like a thought process? Like, hey, we can't find him here. They clearly say we can't find this dude. We've searched and searched for him in Australia. We can't find him. So where's the only other place you should probably be looking?
A hole in the ground.
He's not in Britain. He's not in freaking Australia. He's obviously in this other land, like it's uninhabitable and stuff. Go scan in for him. They have high tech stuff. Like, go find the people that are obviously in this place, but no one else is. Tim, you said
Yes.
that you liked Kate Beckinsale pretty much playing a dual role of.
I thought the idea of it was fine. I didn't have a problem with it.
I actually liked the original where there were two separate characters because it at one point, spoiler, Sharon Stone gets killed, and Michael Ironside. His character was already like kind of like this like kind of like a badass, but he kind of takes it to the next level when she dies because they had a little thing going on,
Yeah.
and he's like willing to literally like sacrifice like
The
everybody
entire planet by shooting at
by
him.
shooting like the glass that keeps him separated from
The rest of
the
Mars.
rest of Mars and stuff like that. Like, he just takes it to the next level, and I love his fight on the elevator with Arnold when his arms get lopped off
Yes.
on the elevator. And he's like, see you at the party, and just fucking chucks his arms.
Right,
Like, I don't know, like I liked that there were two separate characters there. Like, I didn't feel like
because of the end result and what Michael Ironside's character brought to the story, then yes,
because
I agree with you.
Kate Beckinsale's character's whole motivation, what was it? Like, Michael Ironside's was like, hey, he's like this lackey for this dude, and once she gets killed, he has another motivation to keep going after Arnold. Kate Beckinsale's was pretty much like,
I want to kill him.
we heard about you in the academy, and you were supposed to be this badass. Like, it's almost like she's just trying to prove, like, I'm better than you. That was her whole motivation. Like, that's why I want you dead, and I want to keep chasing you.
You're right.
Like,
Ultimately, it did not work in the end. I agree with you, but I think the idea, if you're going to try to make a decent story, making it a little bit tighter, one less character, it's
removing a
fine.
character,
It's fine,
I
but
guess.
it ultimately did not work,
I mean, I feel like there were other characters that could, like his friend, the African American guy, who shows up in the beginning for a little bit, then shows up again and betrays him out of nowhere. Like, there's no motivation there. Was he always working for them? Did they pay him to do this? Like, you don't know.
Bokeem
Bokeem Woodbine,
Woodbine,
yes.
and they combine his character with the Toby Jones character from the original,
Yes.
and like I said before, that scene with just the three of them, Arnold, Toby Jones, and Sharon Stone, is so great. You know, you're wondering along with Arnold, what should he do, you know?
And a little more suspenseful, too, because...
Very suspenseful.
They give him, a cyanide pill or something, and he puts it in his mouth.
Well, it's like the red pill or blue pill from the Matrix, you know?
Yeah. It's like, take this, it'll wake you up or whatever. And, like, he takes it, and then he starts looking at the guy, and, you know, he starts sweating, so he's like, he knows he's lying.
A bead of sweat. Yeah.
And this one, it was tears.
It was a tear from Jessica Biel.
Oh, God.
Really, that's enough? Like, maybe she's just stressed in the situation. You just killed your friend.
And you just met her, you know?
Yeah, it's like, you just killed your friend, like, because she cried. Like, maybe she's just stressed out, and she's like, you know, like...
And that scene went on way too long.
Yes.
You know, it's a lot tighter in the original. That scene is way too long.
And it's ridiculous that they actually get away, because they are
all
literally
those
surrounded. There's like 100 guys out there, like they just somehow just start shooting and run away, like I don't know.
Yeah, and they make it upstairs, and then all of a sudden, Kate Beckinsale's up there. Like, did she go up the back row, the back elevator or something? I didn't get it. Anything else you guys want to mention about both of these movies or anything?
I think I'm good.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Grade for the remake, Hermano?
For the remake?
Yes.
Like C minus.
Wally?
I give it a C+. Because I really like the sci-fi elements in this movie.
It's funny because I give synthetics. It a C. So that averages out to a C. All right. That's a C for... So, ultimately, first one's better?
Yeah, the first one is certainly better.
I would say so, yeah.
I think the second one is more of a hardcore science fiction movie than it is an action movie. Because of the elements that they introduced with the fall and the synthetics.
I'm curious if anybody could, who has no knowledge of the original, would go into this movie and find anything worthwhile coming out of it, you know?
The twist, I think, is still a really good twist. If you haven't seen the original, I would still say go watch the original, but, I mean, if you're curious, go check out the new one.
Okay.
Right now it's at a 30% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, if that tells you anything.
I think it tells a lot. I say go see the original, avoid the remake. Anyways. That does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. You can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
And you can also follow us on Twitter when we post... at 1STTime, 1STTimeWatchers at twitter.com.
Well, lucky for you, every time a Facebook post is up, so it goes automatically to Twitter.
Oh, well. Good.
Hermano, isn't there something about Tumblr?
Oh, yes. We have a Tumblr page as well, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Yay. Download our episodes on iTunes. Feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, send us a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. Stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing The Bourne Legacy.
Shit yeah, son. First time watchers, because we like to watch.
And I had people like stay over at my old apartment. It was wicked quiet except for that. Freak out.
I've always lived in a relatively quiet area, so any kind of noise like that just is like, what the hell?
I was like way back when, like it was, I was at Tammy's place and we hear kapow, kapow, kapow first thing in the morning, and she's like, the hell is that? I go, oh, that's shotgun blasts.
Awesome.
You stay in the house. I'm gonna go see what this is all is all about. She has probably just coyotes, nearby.
Who was shooting shotguns?
Oh, the farmer behind the house.
Farmer behind the house.
Yeah.
Was he far away enough from the house that it wouldn't?
No, the farm. If you go through the woods, you can find the farm. There's coyotes out that way. So most likely, his livestock was getting harassed.
You know, a few weeks ago, I was getting onto the highway from near my place, and as I was on the on ramp to the highway, I saw a coyote on the other side of the guardrail, and I was like, what the hell?
With an Acme rocket taped to his back.
chasing a roadrunner. Yes, and then I looked to my left, and there was the roadrunner.